This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, we'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. And Bill, as you did a check on the audio, hopefully folks can chime in if they can hear us on the audio while we're doing roll call.
All right. Ian Akishoku?
Oh, here.
I didn't write your name phonetic on the sheet. I'm so sorry if I said that wrong.
I'm not offended.
Okay. Valerie Amer?
Present.
Awesome. Does it sound okay currently? I'll take that as a okay. Marcy Benda?
Present.
Richard Benzel?
Here.
And Katie?
Yeah, Katie, yeah, here.
Nicola Deneuve? Eve DeRosa? Jacob Veit?
Here.
Brandon Fortenberry?
Here.
Thomas Fox?
Here.
Preston Hanley?
Here.
David Heiner?
Present.
Deborah Howell? Carolyn Levine? Manaya Lewis? Amelie Ononye?
Here.
James Richards? Stephanie Tanis? Jessica Withers?
Here.
Richard Benzel?
Oh, nice. I'm here again.
Fantastic.
And Nick Deneuve, has joined us on the Zoom now.
Fantastic.
And Jeff Marie Martin. All right. With that, I forgot to follow up my land acknowledgement. I haven't got it memorized, so I will bring that up. Cornell University is located on the traditional homeland of the Gayagono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayagono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University in New York State and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayagono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gayagono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. And with that, we'll move to a call for late additions to the agenda. We like to add a late addition. I will note that I am going to add committee appointees. We checked in on the committees. It's not on the agenda. So we should add committee appointments to the
Sure. I'll motion to add committee appointment discussion to the open forum section.
Second. Any objections? Seeing none, we'll add that in there. Next up here, we have updates for potential invitees and guest speakers. I did run into Chief Honan at last week's Public Safety Advisory Committee feedback session, and he did acknowledge that he's received the invite and will be getting back to me as soon as possible regarding his schedule and being able to attend, as well as I did make initial connection with the Public Safety Advisory Committee members that were present, and they voiced an interest as well in joining to report out on the work that they've been doing. So I will follow up with the invite to that as well. Any other invites or suggestions or thoughts as far as invited guests for our assembly meeting here would be greatly welcomed. All right. Next item we have here is a search for the university ombuds. So Kelly Cunningham from the president's office reached out to let me know that they would begin the search. As some folks may recall, as we started this session, we are voted to, maybe it was at the end of last session. Did we start with this? The extension of the interim appointment?
So maybe we did that already to the end of this.
Yeah, so there's an interim appointment for the current ombudsman to be able to continue in an interim capacity until such time as they're able to fill the position. They are now looking to begin the search for the position. And as per the University Assembly Charter, that the UA may appoint a representative on that search committee. And so Kelly Cunningham has reached out to see if we would like to appoint a representative. At this time, the the current constituent makeup of the search committee is still not finalized. Kelly did give me a couple of folks that she's looking at for that search committee, and then asked if we would be interested in providing someone. One thing that she also noted is that the search is, you know, designed to be as efficient as possible, set up a way in which they can be, the applicants can be reviewed via box files as quickly as possible. And the goal is to have someone in the role by January 1st. So with that, I open the floor to any questions or comments, as well as any potential nominees or suggestions for search candidates.
The business department's committee. Who uses the folks?
Who uses the services of the university outlets?
Right. Because I was thinking that if it's students, for example, if it's undergraduate students, then the students in the
I don't have any data on the uses of university omelets, but I do know that it is available for everyone to speak to questions or concerns or things in the Cornell community. But I don't have statistics on that. I couldn't reach back out to them and ask.
The ombudsman, the office of the ombudsman, makes a report to the university assembly every year, so you should be able to go back into any number of minutes for those reports that would have all the data that you.
But are those online?
They'd be in the probably in the minutes of. Yes, they would be online. If you'd like, we can see if we can find those and send them to you. But I think that there's.
They may even be on the ombudsman's office. They are on the ombudsman. University of the Ombudsman annual report says it's forthcoming on their website. If I may, I think that you know their goal is to have a member from each of the constituencies on the search committee. Well, we were just speaking about the appointment of someone to the search committee for the university ombudsman. I know that there has. And the current folks that they reach out to, a staff member, family member, planning to ask. So it may be who best to look at having a student to round that out. So just think a little bit of additional information there. And students are looking at me now. And just to reiterate again, the goal of the search committee is to make it as efficient as possible, that you're not spending days and days reviewing applicants. Lisa Yeager will be coordinating the search committee, and the applicants will come in to make them as easily reviewed as possible. By the time they would get to the search committee, they would be viable applicants. That's how they would go in the search committee. So it would be something where you would be reading, you know, hundreds of applications. It would be the ones that come in that would be viable as candidates. Yes, President.
So we need just one student, is that correct, or is there for multiple?
Just one student.
Okay.
Would be, well, one appointee, the recommendation would be for a student, but just one student.
Okay, gotcha.
Oh, yes.
I was going to say, if you accept, I would recommend
that. I'm interested in learning more. If there's someone I could communicate about that, I would be willing to, but I don't know if I can commit this time. So if you can put me in contact with that person, I'd be willing to look into it. I just need to know the time commitment, that's all. So
absolutely, I'd be happy to get that information. Connected to get that information again. It was provided, you know, phrased to me that the time commitment would be as minimal as possible, not to discount what the work needs to be done, but and everybody has a lot to do, and having another thing on there can be count.
Yeah, I'd be open to learning more.
I think there's going to be hundreds of candidates.
I assume. I
use that term really. You're probably going to be looking at 3 to 5 candidates.
I'm just hesitant to accept quite this moment, but I would be more than welcome to communicating that in you know, get it back before the next meeting.
Richard, is the plan to appoint somebody from an outside university or from an inside university?
I don't know that answer, but in my
answer,
I believe
it's always been a kind of faculty member.
Yeah, that's good,
but people
inside.
Might be part of it. So.
Yeah.
Oh, yes,
you. So I actually spoke to Charlie Walcott about this today, seeing that it was on the agenda,
yeah.
And he recommended someone who would know all the different resources on the campus. And so the idea of having someone from outside the university that would be really challenging for the ombudsman to point people to the right resources. So that was his recommendation. So he's been here a while, and that's sort of where everything is.
Thank you for that. So then at this time, it sounds like we don't have any formal nominations, but perhaps some interest that we could
connect. I'm definitely interested, and I'd love to learn more. So if you can connect with those people, I can definitely have a decision before next meeting.
Would it be appropriate to move?
I would say that it would be appropriate to move for a nomination and be able to accept it, understanding that there's always the opportunity to say, unfortunately, not able to do it.
So I mean,
in that case, I'll accept it for now, and then and the condition that if it comes up that I can't do it, I'll share that in the next meeting.
Thank you. So we have it. Richard has moved to nominate for the nomination of Duncan, and has been seconded by Eve. Any objections? In seeing none, as it currently stands, we'll appoint Duncan to the position on the search committee for the University Ombudsman, and I will connect you with the search committee members so you can get a little bit more insight there.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for that. All right. Next up, then, we don't have any late additions, so we can jump right into assembly reports. And my email had a few things in it, so I'm sure there's a little bit from the SA and the GPSA today, so happy to have you. So welcome. I'll need to start with the student assembly.
Yeah, so as far as student assembly, last meeting, most of our meeting was basically a Q&A with the VPM of enrollment, John Burley. We have quite a decent amount of community members come to ask specific questions just about how financial aid is working this year. There's a Cornelson article about it, but basically who's asking individual questions. So for students who have personal concerns, just helping and supporting with that. And then there were also just like larger concerns about financial aid on campus, employment on campus, moving forward, how financial aid will be distributed to make sure that because according to the estimate, about 16 students have received their like formal financial aid packages at this point right now. So just kind of working through that. We had some byline announcements. This is a byline from the year for the student assembly. And our VP of Finance is doing a great job. That's Maureen Baker. The Appropriations Committee has heard reports from the Cornell Readership Program, Slope Day Programming Board, and the Student Assembly regarding their like funding requests for the byline year. We also had the Professional Fraternity Council. We have representatives come to speak to us basically about their charter, and up until now, they've been required, all of their PFOs, which are their professional fraternity organizations, have been required to report diversity stats to one PFC, and then additionally, we have access to that information. They, like, originally at the beginning of the year, when they brought their charter back to us, tried to basically remove that clause. And then we voted that down. So right now we're requiring they still release their diversity statistic. So their representatives came to basically request that we uphold like their original recommendation, which is removing those diversity statistics. So we have basically an open forum with them. We have a resolution on the floor. It's the only resolution last week regarding Orange Shirt Day. Basically through the university to recognize Orange Shirt Day, which is in support of Indigenous students on campus. And then we got information for our new freshman representatives and transfer representatives. They were newly elected and they're gonna be sworn in on Thursday. And that's it.
very much. Any questions?
What was the basis of the pre-professional fraternity council? I'm guessing PSC. What was the basis of their wanting to take out the clause for releasing diversity statistics?
Yeah, so it's a little bit complicated. Basically, their argument is that, so the Professional Fraternity Council is a relatively new organization, and they umbrella all the professional fraternity organizations on campus. And those are organizations that just throughout our university have issues with diversity on campus, and also just with like inclusion, stuff along those lines. So that was a clause that they were in assembly to make when they created their charter. But what they're saying is basically organizations don't really have that huge incentive to stay within the professional fraternity council. So when they're like required to release those diversity statistics, if they don't basically agree, they're just leaving basically the organization. And they're like, basically what they were like trying to convey to us is that their organization requires that their like sub-orgs do like sexual violence prevention training, diversity training, and a bunch of other things that they think that like those professional orgs should have on our campus. It's basically, they think it's bad that they just believe in them and don't have those requirements because they're not mandated basically by the university to do those. So that was their argument that they came to the student assembly for. And then they got some pushback by student assembly members who argue that this isn't a new policy, it's a policy that they've had like ongoing, so they're wondering how many organizations will necessarily be if they've already been required to do this. That was basically the crux of the argument. There hasn't been a resolution as of now, but I have our executive board meeting tonight, so I'll see if there's any resolution thinking about changing basically their charter.
Thank you for that. And just to note, the folks on the Zoom, just saying that we can try to, I think part of it is to kind of keep your head up. If you talk, since the microphones are above us, that might be what causes the fluctuation. So, any other questions, Ron? We had a question here in the chat asking what Orange Shirt Day is again.
Yeah, I can look. So it's the actual resolution is called Declaring Orange Shirt Day as an official day of recognition and solidarity. And basically the resolution was talking about Orange Shirt Day, which is recognized, I wanna get the date, on September 30th. And it's a national day of remembrance for the US Indian boarding schools. And it is informally recognized by the United States, but they want it formally recognized by the university.
I had a question for you. I saw the resolution in regards to the financial aid. Do you feel that there was a sufficient answer? As I recall, what you had stated there last we had the same scenario where students in the student assembly were voicing the lack of funds reaching to them and then getting a bill and then having to worry about how am I paying that bill if I haven't gotten my financial aid. Do you feel like you have an understanding of what the hang up is there, or you know, you have a presentation? Wondered if you have any insight into what's causing this concern.
Yeah, so I can answer as far as the resolution. That was actually my mistake. So that resolution was tabled and then brought to assembly again. So I was just resubmitting it basically to President Pollock. But that was a resolution that came to the floor last week. But we did, so I had just like missed that. So I was just following up with that. But the basically from the presentation, what we had in basically the arguments that we got just in general as a summary is that one, financial aid and the virtual office are just really deeply understaffed. So as a result, they weren't able to get to as many like packages in the way that they used to and they did previously. VP Burdick basically really like emphasized that if students feel like they can't pay their rent or they can't get specific resources on campus, stuff along those lines, they should go directly to the financial aid office or go directly to him.
and they can speed up basically that process. They're doing like some basically proactive stuff just to make sure that it doesn't happen again in the future. And then another concern that came up was the fact that students, if they have a bursar hold, and if they haven't been able to necessarily pay their financial aid, their just statements and payments to university, sometimes that can put a hiring freeze on their account, so they're not able to apply to on-campus jobs. And they actually, basically, from his view, like he said that he had just found out about that last week, and students have brought that concern. So they said that they were working retroactively to fix that, just so that students could get hired on campus.
Yeah. Just to put some numbers to that, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I was in a similar position, very curious about this. The first number always escapes me, but I believe it was the 33 is their total staff at full capacity. When he took over, they were at 12. Then they went to 16 before the summer. I think it's in there somewhere. And then, like, long and short of it is they're very close to, I think they're at 28, including the new hires in the training process. So a big point he made was that in order to negate this from happening in the future, he is like focusing on hiring now. And there was like talk about turnover with old issues and really trying to meet that like full staff capacity. It was a big part of our conversation. So
thank you very much for that clarification. I appreciate it. It's definitely a concern to hear students in that situation and a lack of transparency around that. Obviously the entire world is challenged with staffing right now. It's hard to fill positions. And there can be clarity to help students understand where the process is so that they're not left in the dark wondering, how am I going to pay this tuition? So I appreciate that. Any other questions for Alex? With that, we will move on to our next report from Preston on the GTSA.
So we haven't had a meeting since we were last week. So there isn't a whole lot to report, but we've definitely been taking this period to catch up. Now we have the different staff and vacancies, and so getting everybody up to speed has definitely been our main priority this week and will be next week as well. So we got a lot to do before the next meeting, but we're definitely excited for the things to come this year. So
great, thank you, Brett. Any questions for Brett?
Just congratulations.
All right, and now we'll move to Jessica from the Employee Assembly. Again, I want to acknowledge that we had a meeting last week, so not everyone has new information, so it's understandable. I recommend Jessica.
Hi, and yes, that's the same for us. We haven't met since last week either, although I can say we are looking at a resolution in support of interim policy 6.3 tomorrow. So next time we all meet here, I'll have more updates.
Thank you, Jessica. Any questions for Jessica?
Could you remind me what 6.3 is?
That's the consensual relationships.
Oh, right.
And they've just updated it to forbid relationships between, or romantic relationships between staff and undergraduates.
We just got a bunch of alerts on the Zoom. I know hopefully people can still hear us. I don't know what just happened. Maybe that computer went to sleep up there, Casey. If the camera went off. Oh, they can still hear us. All right, we'll go with that. All right, now we'll move on to the Faculty Senate. And thank you for reporting on the Faculty Senate.
Thank you. So this is my first opportunity to actually come and be here. Sorry I couldn't make the other meeting, but
welcome.
Thank you. So I should just report on, we've had two Senate meetings so far. The first one was a special Senate meeting due to faculty concerns around having to teach in person and the anxieties of that. So we had a listening session on the 5th of December, September, excuse me, where faculty got to voice their concerns. And then on the 7th, we had a special Senate meeting where we considered two resolutions that were brought forward by faculty senators and the AAUP. And both of the resolutions that were brought to the floor of that Senate meeting One was dealing with accommodations for faculty and students and staff during the pandemic, and that was approved and was forwarded to the president and provost with comments from faculty. And the second resolution was faculty discretion to teach online. And that also was brought forward by faculty senators, it was sponsored by them and AAVP. And that also was approved and forwarded to the president and provost. That was the first Senate meeting. And then we've had a second one. And it tended to happen once a month. So the first one wasn't intended, but this scheduled meeting is on the 22nd of September. And there we had updates on the anti-racism initiatives at the university level by Vice Provost of Academic Affairs, Adrian, and went over what the presidential advisory committee has done in the summer, basically. Then we had an update on the College of Human Ecology has created a new department. They brought the two design departments in the college and bring them together and form a one larger design department. And so they went over the process. Faculty got to vote on it, and it's been now brought to the Senate. And now that it's been announced at the Senate and people have had an opportunity to speak about it, it's going to move the process. And then to the justice. And then we considered four resolutions. One was actually, I'll start with the most complicated. One was from the University Faculty Committee. This was to resolve the process by which international dual degree programs are approved by the university. And the suggestions that came out of the Senate, so I brought four pending resolutions to the Senate floor that were sitting there from the spring. And so the first one was this sort of approval process and recommendations that came from the Senate in the spring. Over the summer, the previous unit faculty worked with the Vice Provost of International Affairs and integrated all the suggestions from the Senate into the approval process, and the most important part was actually having a faculty representative on their international council. And so that was the real sticking point that's been solved. And so because it was resolved this summer, that was there was a motion to withdraw it, and so that was resolved. And then we have three that are still being voted on right now. Two are title, professor title changes in ILR. And so we'll know what the vote is on that soon. And then the last one was a Senate-sponsored proposal on all new programs at the university that they should be approved through the Senate. And so that is still being considered. That's all.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
I'd love to know if there's been any response from President Pollack or anyone else in the administration about that first resolution, the adopting university policies for reasonable accommodations for faculty, instructors, staff, and students during the pandemic.
So she, President Pollack, spoke at our special Senate meeting, and basically in that meeting, said that it's the university's prerogative to say that we are a student-centered, residential experience, in-person teaching university. And so I just received a response from her for those two resolutions that basically that position. And so I will be sharing that in our Senate meeting that we have coming up next week. And I will also post it where the resolutions are so that they're publicly available.
Thank you. Can I recognize that, Nick?
Thank you. So I have a quick question about the resolution about the joint program with, yes. So did the university say anything about completely disregarding the will of the faculty, or are they just silent on that? And then moreover, you said that you're doing you have another resolution underway to approve any new programs through the Senate. Does this apply to any new programs that are collaborations with other universities, or just in general, like if there's ever a new field of study at Cornell that would have to go through the Senate?
So the first one, so the international dual degree program, the one that was withdrawn, is that the one you're referring to first with the will of the faculty?
So is that, was that program canceled? The one?
I see what you're saying. So this was in response to a international dual degree program that was presented in the spring and then approved and moved forward by the university in the summer. Is that what you're referring to? Despite
yes.
the fact that the Senate got
yes.
it. Okay.
Yeah.
So no, there was no direct response to going against the recommendation of the Faculty Senate, but the previous Dean of Faculty did work with, there were five steps that were recommended by the Senate and by the faculty. And so all five of those steps are actually part of the approval process. So that part, and so that resolution is specifically about that moving forward, when you have an international dual degree program, these are the five steps that should happen. So that is all in place, and that's why it was withdrawn and considered resolved. But you're lucky enough to have the senator who presented the pending resolution. And so maybe, Richard, you could speak to that?
Well, I think one thing, I think Nick is talking about the China resolution
yeah.
from the spring.
Yeah.
And that, of course, was, the Faculty Senate rejected that program. And then on commencement day, the administration announced that it was approving it in the Cornell Chronicle, but never made a report to the Faculty Senate. So I think when Nick is asking whether the administration made a report, that's what he's referring to. Has the administration made a report?
No.
So basically, Nick, they ignored it,
yeah.
which is there are two resolutions for considering dual degree programs. And the basic difference between the two of them is that the one that's now being voted on by the Faculty Senate provides that all of the information about the program, all the preceding committees and so forth, would report to the Faculty Senate before it goes to the provost. That's the one thing voted on now. The one that basically, and I disagree with Ian on this, the consultations with that she described between the Faculty Senate and the administration that led to the USC proposal, those were in secret. They were not public. The Faculty Senate did not participate in them. I would never even knew they were going on. So that proposal is basically a central administration plan. And the way it stands now, under the interpretation of the Dean of Faculty Office, is that the central administration plan will go into effect if the resolution that's being voted on now is voted down. So basically by fiat. So there's no chance in this process for the Faculty Senate to amend, to advise, or to participate in the program that the UFC and the Dean of Faculty have proposed. This is a basic problem, and it will come up in the Faculty Senate.
And this is obviously a point of conversation that we'll be having for a while. So the resolution that was withdrawn because the faculty, the university faculty committee felt that all of the recommendations from the faculty senate were integrated into the process. Has the faculty voice represented through the committee of academic policies and procedures? And so the difference between the two resolutions is that that is the faculty representation for the senate versus Richards that has both CAP and the faculty senate. And so that's the one that's being considered at this point.
With the one caveat that there's a procedural difference. The one that went to the faculty for a vote was discussed and could have been amended and so forth. The one that would go into effect under the interpretation of the central administration was never had a chance for amendment or change by the faculty senate. That is a major difference.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate both of your responses, Dean DeRosa and Dr. Bensel.
I have a question. I know I asked this last week, but I wasn't here. So I know you talked about like hearing anti-racism initiatives, and I was on working group at last year, which was creating the anti-racism center. I was wondering if there's like any progress in that, or if we're seeing that happen.
So that was not announced by Vice Provost August, but I believe we're going to be hearing very soon about what those plans are, and there are concrete plans, but it's not for me to.
Any other questions, Ruth? Thank you so much for that. I greatly appreciate it. All right, and next up again, I know the committees probably have not had a chance to meet since last we met. Perhaps you could roll in the question regarding committee appointments, and committees could provide us with any updates on how many appointees they're still looking to. I know, I believe that we've filled all the university assembly appointments, but I don't believe all the constituent groups have done their appointments and their voting appointments and their non-voting appointments. So if anyone would like to provide updates so that other members of the constituencies can hear the appointments that are lacking there. So let's start with the, obviously this one, unless the executive committee perform.
Yeah, nothing new to report. We didn't meet, obviously, we usually meet at this time on meeting. So we didn't meet this time, and yeah, we're full.
And now I'll turn to James Richards for report from the Code and Judicial Committee.
Yeah, nothing new to report besides the fact that we're going to be having our first meeting this Friday, as I announced last week. It's tentatively going to be from 2 to 3:30 p.m. If we can make that work location-wise. But yeah, the main points are going to be discussing the new role of the CJC under the new code, and we also hope to hear from Karen Bix, the new hearing panel chair, introducing herself and just basically how she'd like to work with the CJC in the coming year.
Thank you very much, James. Any questions for James? And how are you on your appointments? Have you checked your roster to see what you're missing?
Yes, but I've not made any appointments yet.
Yeah, if you are missing anything, if you can just get those to Richard, who can help. Same for all the committees. If you're missing members, just letting Richard know so that he can reach out to the constituent groups to get new members. Next, we'll move to the Campus Welfare Committee, but I don't see Deborah here. So we'll skip that one. And we'll move to Ian on the Infrastructure, Technology, and Environment.
Over the weekend, I'm pleased to report that we received two appointments from both the GPSA as well as two appointments from the Student Assembly. So I think as far as voting members, I think we're still missing a voting member from the Employee Assembly. So we are planning on having our first meeting Monday, October 18th, around 4 to 5 p.m.
I see Jessica Withers has raised your hand. Can I have Jessica?
Thanks. I should have. Thanks. I should have mentioned that, yes, I have, we're going to be voting on some liaison appointees at our meeting tomorrow in the Employee Assembly. So hopefully I will have some names for these committees. Sorry, I should have mentioned that earlier.
That's okay. Thank you, Jessica. I appreciate that. Anything else, Mia? Or
who were the two students before these? From the student assembly, I'm sorry, only one appointee. We have Valeria Valencia.
Yes, I believe Patrick Naylor, maybe? Not yet. No, never mind. Tried that.
That's different.
Retracted. Sorry.
All right.
That's campus planning.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And just a note for all of our committee chairs to, do understanding, to begin the work and understanding that the Zoom and in-person can be challenging without technology. So it's perfectly acceptable for committees to work in a Zoom environment until such time as you can find a better space, or in person if you prefer, but it can be difficult to navigate that. So if you have any troubles or challenges, don't hesitate to reach out. That's up to the Office of the Assemblies, and we can help to navigate how best to approach this.
We can also help find spaces if you need to meet in person.
All right. All right, and then lastly, then we have our liaison reports. If we have any liaison reports at this time, don't believe it. So, yes,
The Campus Planning Committee actually met directly before this meeting. Okay. I'll make a quick report. Three topics were discussed. The experimental hall for the Wilson Synchrotron site, which if you're unfamiliar, is the accelerator on Cornell's campus. Specifically, there was a discussion about the construction of a new building funded by a National Science Foundation grant of $33 million, which will be close to the Wilson Laboratory alongside Cascadilla Creek. There was also a further update on the hot water master plan and earth source heating. Still on schedule to begin construction of the test well sometime in the spring of 2022. And there was a discussion about the Ferno Green updates as far as accessibility in terms of some modifications to the stair scheme and construction of a new backup diesel generator siting. The diesel generator will result in some visible aesthetic modifications to the Bakersfield Hall site, but the planners will do their best to mitigate those.
Where is that located? You said Ferno is...
Ferno Green. The diesel generator is being put in...
so that's way up Tower Road, if I'm
mistaken. Yes.
Ferno is east of Bradfield on that side.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yes, sorry, that's at Bakersfield. All the Bradfield hall is where the generator will be.
Right, right. Oh, wow.
Any other questions for Ian? Thank you for that report. I appreciate it. All right, and with that, I believe we have made it through our agenda. So entertain a motion to adjourn, or if there's anything else,
move to adjourn.
So, yeah. Movement to adjourn. Nick, I see your hand up. Let's make sure.
Sure.
Are you seconding the motion?
Yes, that was the goal.
All right, just want to make sure. I don't want to make food on the Zoom. I know it can be hard. So, all right, with that, we see no objections. We will adjourn. Thank you all so much. And for a please have a great Albert.
Oh, yeah.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.